Royals are hanging by a thread. A draw with Wigan rescued as the Royals look to have plumbed even darker depths was simply not enough to go into the final day with any confidence of a great escape. And it may all be over before then anyway. Welcome to the Tarleton Podcast, episode 337, the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, joining you today to talk about Reading 1, Wigan 1. We had a real good crack at being optimistic and positive on last week's show. Unfortunately, it has not necessarily paid off with the result on the pitch. And we'll be talking about exactly how Reading can still stay up and exactly what went wrong over the weekend on this show. To do that with me is Harry Chafer, on the Tarleton's top writers. How's it going, mate?
Hi, Mark. Yeah, not too bad. Good as can be, given the situation, I think. But not a great weekend, was it?
No, not really. It's just the amount of results going against Reading from other teams as well is quite staggering. Now we've lost Cardiff, lost QPR, still got Rotherham and Huddersfield to rely on, but Huddersfield managed to pull out the win over Cardiff today, which was just about as bad a result as it could have been. Luckily, it wasn't by about seven goals, which really would have killed us off. So we've got a bit of a shortened show for you today, in the sense that we're just doing the recap in the mailbag. I won't bother doing the kind of in-betweeny bits, the interludes and stuff between the sections. We'll just crack on and get some recap and mailbag in you, because I'm recording with Ross on Thursday evening, a preview for the Huddersfield game. We'll be recording that as Huddersfield finish up against Sheffield United. So actually, that could be an instant reaction to being relegated. So we'll see how that one goes. But this means we get a chance to just focus on the Wigan game today. And as always, a thank you to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, and our Patreon subscribers as we go into that. And Harry, just a word before we talk about the performance, that looking around the ground as the game was starting and everything, I mean, I had such flashbacks to greater time, seeing the ground full, proper atmosphere. It was a pretty decent day, sunny at times, and it just felt like an occasion. And Reading don't, you know, in the last few years, other than the playoff run that we had in 2017, Reading haven't had an occasion like that for ages. And it was, result aside and everything, it was really good that the club and the fans and everything are still able to pull that out of the bag when necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, to sell out the crowd. You know, it's one thing selling out a crowd when you're pushing for playoffs and trying to get into the Premier League. It's another thing selling out the stadium when, you know, your championship status is hanging by a thread. So you have to give complete credit to the fans for turning up. And, you know, it was the loudest I've heard the stadium in a very, very long time. And we did our bit. But unfortunately, that couldn't translate to the players on the pitch.
No, and I suppose the big question of Noel Hunt I had in this game, and generally speaking, I've been pretty happy with how Noel Hunt's managed things. He went to a 4-3-3 for this game with McIntyre sat deep, which in theory made sense. The main question I had was Shane Long on the right wing. Just meant that we got the ball out there fairly often, but there was no threat of an end product in getting the ball into the box. We made absolutely nowhere near enough use of getting the ball into Lucas Schau's feet and to get into quite a lot of good positions in the first half. And we ended up on the right much more than the left, even though Hoylett and Guinness Walker were actually able to put a cross into the box. It just meant that there weren't anything like enough times, particularly in that first half when we were on top, when we actually tested the goalkeeper and really drew something out. And you think of Cassidy as well. Maybe he would have been better just moving out on the right wing or just starting Femi Azeez. He was obviously the impact sub. I don't think there was any way Yaku Mate could have done 90 minutes. But for Noel Hunt, I just feel like that was a good opportunity to start up front with Zhao and Long and have those as a pair and take the game to Wigan in that sense and get more balls into the box and see what they could do. But instead, we just kind of halfway housed it a little bit and it didn't pay off.
No, I think Hunt said after the game, didn't he, that I think he wanted his experienced players on the pitch, which is fine. You can start Shane Long, you can start Junior Hoylett, but yeah, Shane Long on the right-hand side just didn't work. And I don't think it was ever going to work, really. When the lineups came out, I was kind of figure out how's he going to do this. It just didn't work with Long out on the right hand side. He got, like you said, he got the ball on quite a few occasions, but he just lacked that, you know, experience of being a right winger to actually do anything with it when he got it. And then couple that with Andy Iedom, who, you know, in years gone by has been quite an attacking fullback, but this season we just haven't seen that from him for multiple reasons. It didn't really work. It may have worked a little bit better if you'd brought Hoyler over to that right hand side, because on the left hand side, you've at least got Nesta Guinness Walker, who is, you know, naturally attacking anyway. It's one of the things I think Hunt's got wrong since he's come in, and he hasn't got a huge amount wrong. You know, he's been dealt a pretty tough hand to try and keep us up in the limited games that he got given. But yeah, I wasn't really impressed with that decision, and, you know, it hasn't defined our season, but it really didn't give us a great chance to go and win the game.
Now, something else I noticed as well is you look at the stats, and obviously, I mean, the stats kind of irrelevant in a game like this. I suppose the only two stats that are telling is that from 21 shots, only 5 hit the target for Reading. And Reading also had 13 corners. And I guess the goal did eventually come from a corner. But before that, there were a couple of Tom Holmes headers. McIntyre had an opportunity, a bit of a snapshot. But Reading just didn't seem to be, again, testing the goalkeeper from these moments that, actually, I kind of thought during the game that it'd be sod's law if we scored from a set piece, because it's the only real thing, scoring from set pieces, that we've actually done kind of okay at this season. And maybe it was the fact that Tom Ince wasn't there to take them. Maybe that's been the key. But again, it just felt like another thing that Reading got into the position. They did kind of 60, 70% of the work as to getting into the final third. And then these things that we usually rely on. Is there a reason why they're not working, do you think, at the moment, particularly with the set pieces?
I don't know. Like you said, earlier in the season, we were probably still just as bad going forward, but we had set pieces and we were a real threat from them. So every single time it stood over a free kick or a corner, you thought, you know, we could score here. But yeah, I don't know whether it was the occasion, like we mentioned earlier, the pressure of, you know, we've got to win this game. And, you know, we had 4 or 5 that hit the first man. And I think, I mean, on a bit of a tangent, that's one of my biggest bugbears in football, is professional footballers hitting the first man from a corner or a free kick. You know, it just shouldn't happen. And yeah, I think it might have been the occasion of, you know, we don't really have an attacking identity. So any sort of chances or goals we do score are going to probably come through a set piece, and on the biggest game of the season, it just let us down. You know, we had good takers as well on the pitch, even though Ince wasn't on the pitch. You have Junior Hoyler, who's a good set piece taker, and Nesta Guinness Walker on the other side, who can produce a good delivery. So yeah, really frustrating that, you know, we're not a team who are going to go and score 2 or 3 goals from open play. We haven't been that team all season. So for set pieces to let us down is a bit annoying, yeah.
Yeah, final thing I'd say on the attack really is that, as you kind of said, it's been like this all season, and there's just such a lack of confidence at the moment in front of goal in terms of players who are going to, you know, pick out a shot or take the right decision or even calm themselves down in the moment and flick it round the defender and that sort of stuff. It just isn't happening. And I suppose that's my biggest concern really for going into Huddersfield, is that Reading, obviously, we all know the situation. We'll kind of talk about what we need in the next couple of days in a second, but Reading ultimately need to score some goals at Huddersfield and need a bit of a miracle. And you need a magic moment. And aside from potentially Lucas Shaw or something like that, I just don't know where it's going to come from. Someone like Jeff Hendrick popping up for a 25-yard drive or something like that. I just don't feel in any way confident that we have the players on the pitch to provide it. And it's actually just kind of difficult now to see where Reading score goals from in just a general game, let alone one of such massive importance where the extra nerves and everything play such a part.
Yeah, we've been starved of any attack and identity or tactical sort of identity for the whole season through Ince. You know, he hasn't been one who's tried to find a way how we're going to score goals. It's been stay in the game, and you know, if you get a chance, a half chance or something from a set piece, go and take it. But like you said, in turn, we've got Lucas Schau is a match winner, and he's proven that so many times in his time in a Reading shirt. You know, at Coventry the other week, the one time we get the ball into his feet on the edge of the box, which is, you know, Lucas Schau, that is dreamland for him. That's what you want to give him. And he produces a nice turn and a finish into the corner. You know, we just haven't done that anywhere near in a full season. And then, you know, lost our biggest match winner last summer, really, didn't we, in terms of John Swift. You know, he was the guy who, if we had John Swift going into this game on Sunday, I'd feel not confident, but a little bit more confident in that we've got someone on the pitch who can just produce something out of nothing. And I think that's what we're hoping for at the minute now, isn't it? You know, in the days to come, we're not going to turn into a team who can pass, do a 30 pass move and put the ball in the back of the net. You know, we're hoping for a miracle in some ways, that someone's just going to pop up and score us a goal, but you know, might not even get that far.
Yeah, well, it's we had Huddersfield Cardiff today, which I go with Cardiff having won the week before. It basically looked like we needed them to win again, having already kind of done the hard work of making themselves safe. That didn't happen. Huddersfield 1-2-1 at Cardiff, probably one, as I say, one of the worst results that could have happened, other than winning 7-0. What that means then, as we sit here on Sunday afternoon, is that there are only two teams that Reading can catch at the moment. There's Rotherham, who have a much better goal difference, so we're not going to catch them on goal difference, but they're 2 points clear of two games to go. They play Middlesbrough on Monday lunchtime, then go to Wigan. So Rotherham have to lose two, and Reading have to win to catch them. As for Huddersfield, they go to Sheffield, or they host, rather, Sheffield United on Thursday. Sheffield United's season is done as well. They've already been promoted. They will finish second. They have to lose that. Even a draw for Huddersfield will mean that they're too far out of reach for Reading. And I suppose this is the issue now, is that I can certainly see Rotherham losing one of those games. I can probably see Huddersfield being denied a win against Sheffield United, but all three, I suppose, you know, Huddersfield maybe don't need to, but if Rotherham don't get it, then Huddersfield obviously have to lose their game. I just don't see us going into the final day of the season having seen all of those games go our way. But I just can't imagine both Huddersfield and Rotherham losing this week, is what I'm trying to say. And that's obviously means that what's likely, in my opinion, is that we're going to go into the final day of the season, I think, probably watching the Rotherham result. And probably, you know, that means us needing a win. Is there, on a mildly optimistic note, Harry, is there a sense that we maybe want Huddersfield to go and get a result against Sheffield United, which means that they'll be not as bothered maybe for the final day of the season? Whereas if Rotherham lose and they're the team, and then they go to a Wigan team that aren't bothered and could maybe, you know, they've had some good results recently, Wigan, maybe they can go and go at home and get another win. That's not implausible. But is that now the most likely way, or do you think the most likely way is Huddersfield?
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point there. It makes it easier in a weird way if there's only one team we're worrying about on Monday rather than two. But yeah, running through the fixtures there, I mean, I think it's Rotherham and Middlesbrough tomorrow, isn't it? Middlesbrough have secured a playoff spot. I think the only thing they can sort of try and get is third spot, but you know, that's pretty irrelevant, really, isn't it? In the playoffs, if you're fourth, trying to get to third, you're going to have home advantage anyway, and it doesn't really matter that much who you play. So, are Rotherham going to be a bit more up for that than Middlesbrough? I'd anticipate so. I mean, to typical Neil Warnock. You can see him going to Sheffield United on Thursday and winning that. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably the pessimist in me that's just built up over the last few weeks and months, and especially after yesterday. But there's a big part of me that's saying that it'll be done and dusted by Thursday evening. I mean, yeah, if we're just hoping for Middlesbrough to win tomorrow. If Rotherham get a point, then that's 3 point gap, and you know, like you said, the goal difference is huge. So yeah, it's a bit of a bleak situation, really.
Yeah, I suppose to wrap up this conversation and move on to the mailbag, what percentage chance are you giving Reading at the moment of staying up? I reckon I'm about 7%. It wouldn't be a miracle in my opinion, because you know, there's only a couple of games and it's not that long a shot to say that Huddersfield and Rotherham will lose to two teams that are in the top four, but and then Reading win, obviously. But it just feels as if there's going to have to be such a swing, not only in kind of Reading's own momentum, but in the luck that's happening. Because as we said, you know, QPR and Cardiff have started picking up results. Huddersfield, who were bottom for a lot of the season, have picked up results. Rotherham are on a tricky run of form, but they do have the edge in terms of the fact they have to lose both their games now. So I'm thinking about 7% is where I'm at for this.
Yeah, I'm there with you, 10% maximum. I mean, even if Huddersfield lose against Sheffield United, we've still got to go there and win. And they're going to want something, and that'll be the one. It'll be like the Wigan game just gone, but just in reverse. We'll need a win away from home, and they'll have a packed out home crowd, and they'll just need a point to stay up. And yeah, I just don't see it happening, in all honesty, and it's pretty sad to come to the realization of that. But as they say, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I think it's been such a process for Reading fans not to kind of overdo it, but to this come into terms with it, as you say. I think a lot of fans have, because you can say, oh yeah, it's over, we're done, or whatever. But actually, when you sit down and think about it a bit more, I mean, I was going through the teams that Reading would face in League One next season. I'm not going to labour on this point too much, but let's put it this way. We wouldn't be going to many grounds that have a capacity over 10,000, which is quite a thing when you think that we're so used as fans to go into, you know, 20,000 seaters. Obviously, we have our own and everything. It's a level of luxury as a fan that would be stripped of us if we were to go down. And you don't necessarily always win at these places, let's put it that way. A couple of questions in the mailbag to end this little show we're doing today then. Greg Double saying, can we believe that the owners have learnt from their mistakes and by association, all the great messaging from Bowen can be believed when Keir Drapshvin is sat in the executive box at our most important game of the season? This, for those who didn't see, the reverse Midas touch agent was seen, agent that is, was seen at the game on Saturday in, I don't think it's the director's box, I think it was in just one of the general boxes. And yeah, I mean, I guess just to clarify a bit further, he says about the great messaging from Bowen. Again, for those that didn't see, there was the Star Fans Forum in town during the week in which Bowen very clearly explained a lot of things. And there's a few of the few places that we can direct you to pick up the coverage of that. I know Reading Between the Lines tweeted out a big old thread of what he was saying, but the gist that was kind of newsworthy was that Reading had to make £12 million of player sales to abide by the EFL player budget plan. And there's also the supposed way of getting around that was by a land sale through shares that was basically disallowed by the EFL board, Bowen was saying. So there was Brian Carey and Jared Dublin as well, who were the kind of new heads of recruitment, and it was by all accounts a very well received evening. And then, as Greg alludes to, there's still Keir Drapshvin floating around in the background of the club. Now, Harry, you can kind of see this two ways. And the first way is that everything that was said was nonsense and that Keir is still there pulling the strings. Or what I would probably say is just as likely, or no, more likely, I don't actually believe that Keir is still doing the strings necessarily, but he may still have some impact on the club, being the agent that he is. But it's probably more likely, in my opinion, that he is you know, he's still a working agent and he's still going to turn up at football grounds and watch players and see how they're getting on. I mean, he's obviously involved in some quite big players, but he also has to still watch Championship, and that's not exactly below him. So what's your kind of view on the situation then as to whether we can believe that the owners and such have learned their lessons?
Yeah, well, ultimately the proof will be in the pudding, won't it? And you know, actions speak a lot louder than words, and all of those age-old cliches, but they're true. And I wasn't at the event that Bowen and Co. did last week, but it looked like a really positive evening to me, and it looked like that there are good people in charge of the club now, or at least better people than were. Like I said, you know, they can talk the talk, but whether they can go on and actually act on what they're saying is another thing, and I don't think we'll be able to tell the full story on that in until, you know, years to come, in fact. But you know, the fact Keir was at the game on Saturday is, I mean, you can completely understand why some fans are concerned about that. You know, we've been burnt with this before, and you know, it's whether it's happening again is a separate question. And personally, I'm on the same page as you. You know, he's a working agent, but you can see why some fans are, you know, a bit cautious and a bit wary about, hang on a minute, we've just been told all of this, but you know, he's at the game. What's going on? Like I said, proof will be in the pudding, but you know, it's not great to see him at the stadium, to be honest.
No, I'm surprised he must. I think he slipped out 5 minutes before the end, which was probably wise, at least, for those fans who'd recognize him and maybe have some questions to ask. Final questions then of this week's show. Bobbin saying, how many of the squad will we have left after any relegation clauses are activated? Sam Clear saying, what's our realistic squad and manager for next season? In terms of relegation clauses, I'm looking at the players that are actually under contract. I can't imagine many of them haven't, to be honest. Maybe Tom Ince, it wouldn't surprise me. Andy Carroll, potentially, but I mean, he's not exactly going to walk into a Championship team if he walks away from Reading. The players that are left and under contract for next season, as far as I'm aware, Bouzanis, Sarr, Yeardom, Holmes, McIntyre, Hutchinson, still knocking around apparently, Abrafa, Ajaria, Aziz, Camara, Ince and Carroll. There are some more, obviously, under 21 players in that, but those are the kind of under 21 players in and around the first team picture at the moment. Will it make a massive difference on what manager we get for next season, do you think? Because, I mean, if it's John O'Shea, he's the name that's been bandied around. And if it's, we're probably talking someone like that, you know, we're looking at a young manager who's maybe not managed yet. I'd be surprised if we're going to poach a manager, but if we are, it would be from League One absolute maximum. So they might not have too much of a difference to say on whether we're in the Championship or League One. I can't imagine John O'Shea would say definitely not in League One, but yes for Championship. Is it, given the pool we're looking in, is it actually going to make a huge amount of difference?
Yeah, that's a question I've been pondering actually, because I think if we had stayed in the, well, we're still in the Championship, but say we do stay in the league, I think you know, we're quite an attractive proposition really in terms of, well, on paper anyway. You know, we're out of the embargo as it was, and you know, we've got good people at the club with a plan in place. And in the Championship, I think we're a good proposition. I think when you go down to League One, it's a little bit more difficult. But I don't think we would. I mean, in the Championship, you might be looking at someone like a Nathan Jones. Maybe that might have been a bit of a far out possibility, but a possibility nonetheless. I don't think someone like him would come down to League One. But yeah, we're not going to go and poach one of the best managers in the league. Or get someone of a Nathan Jones sort of name if we're in League One, but I don't think it'll have too much of an impact. You know, we're still out of our little embargo, and you know, we've got a bit more freedoms in the transfer market. The players you've just reeled off there, you know, on paper, you know, for League One, they should be a pretty good bunch to start with, in my opinion. And then you can sort of build around that. Someone like John O'Shea, I think, like you said, is probably the most likely, you know, a young up and coming manager. But we'll see, won't we?
Yeah, just a quick word in terms of the squad as well. I mean, I'm kind of like you. I think that you put that's almost an 11 there, isn't it? That's about 12, 13 players. But you put that 11 out in League One, it's got a good shout. Sam saying, what's the realistic squad for next season? I think that, again, I have a feeling we would certainly lose out on, you know, certain signings. Obviously, we don't know who's been linked or who they're looking at the moment yet. But in terms of the fundamental setup of the squad, it's been on the record that we're going to look to be taking players who will be released by Premier League teams, like under 21 players. Obviously, we would probably lose out to Championship squads with that, but we might be able to offer them a quicker route to the first team if they came to a title chasing League One team. So that might make a bit of a difference. But Mark Bowen did also say in the week that there's a little bit of a looser financial restriction with League One. In terms of taking players again from League One teams, from League Two teams, you've seen it at places like Derby where they've been able to convince players, say, look, we are going to be fighting for the title, etc. We can then, you know, bring you with us basically on this imaginary rise through the leagues. Is that sense that Reading are still going to be looking in the same pool of players? I think they're still going to be trying to look for players from, you know, League One, League Two, maybe even non-league, get players on a small fee or players that are out of contract and kind of sell them on the vision of the club. Maybe League One, obviously in terms of finances, that changes. I guess the biggest problem then is the competition, isn't it?
Yeah, like, but we're never going to go and break the bank, or I hope we wouldn't again.
We should.
yeah, exactly. So, like you said, I think if we just stay up in the Championship, and if we're, you know, a recently relegated side to League One, you know, theoretically trying to aim to get back into the Championship, like you said, I think those pool of players is probably largely similar in terms of quality and where we're going to try and get players from. You'd imagine people like Holmes and McIntyre and Yeardon would stick around and try and, you know, like you said, be a part of that theoretical rise to through the leagues again. Like I've said before, the proof will be in the pudding. And I mean, in August, if we are in League One, we'll see what kind of squad we have to fight for promotion again. But there's a lot of doomsday talk going around, and again, I can completely understand that. The state the club's been run into in recent years, you know, there's a lot of people fearing for what could happen if we went down into League One. But I'm weirdly optimistic that if we did get relegated, it wouldn't be the complete end of the world. But yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. And then as I say, it's the big week where we're watching for these two games now: Rotherham against Middlesbrough on Monday, and then Huddersfield against Sheffield United on Thursday. And we'll be back to talk about them after they've happened. Let's wait and see. We're in that awful stage now where the fact is that if Rotherham avoid defeat and if Huddersfield avoid defeat as well, Reading are as good as gone. And if Rotherham win and then Huddersfield avoid defeat, it is officially an R next to the Royals' name. So we'll have to wait and see then, Harry. Thank you very much for coming on and talking over what was a build as a massive day in the club's history, and I think probably not the definitive day in the season that we maybe thought it was going to be, but if it does go south, then it's certainly well, I suppose if it goes either way now, then it'll fit the pattern in some regards.
Yeah, exactly that. But no, thanks for having me, and it was great to come on and talk as ever.
And as I say, we'll be back after that Huddersfield Sheffield United game on Thursday night. God knows what we'll be talking about, quite frankly. I'll be surprised if it's good news, but you know what? We live in hope, and let's just wait and see. Until then, I'm on your ass.